Welcome to Closer to Venus. I'm Johnny Burke. Today's guest is Stephen Hawley Martin, best-selling author of several books, including Edgar Cayce, The Meaning of Life and What to Do with It, which is going to be the topic of discussion for today. Stephen, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, Edgar Cayce, for those of our listeners who don't know who he is, who was he and why was he famous?
Well, Edgar Cayce was born on a farm in near Hopkinsville, Kentucky in 1877, and he lived until 1945. He was probably the most famous psychic of the 20th century and was known back then as the sleeping prophet because he would put himself into an induced, self-induced trance and could answer any question put to him. He did over 14,000 readings, which have been transcribed and are available for those who are interested. I guess most of them were on health issues, but many of them were on all kinds of things like why we're here and what life is all about, what the meaning of life is,
all the things we want to know about.
Yeah, all those things that we've been wondering about.
Wasn't he also considered the founder or one of the founders of holistic medicine?
I believe that's true. He was, because often people would come to him. That's really how he got started. When regular doctors weren't able to help them, he would diagnose their problems and come up with solutions. Many of them had to do with using herbs and all kinds of things that would now be considered that kind of holistic medicine. Yeah, absolutely.
Pretty amazing that he's considered not just the most prolific or famous psychic in our history, but also the founder of holistic medicine. How did he learn to go into a trance? Because I don't think most psychics go into a trance in order to do a reading, do they?
That's correct. Yeah. He learned that he had to do that because he had laryngitis, went on for months. And someone suggested that he see a hypnotist about that. But when he was given a post-hypnotic suggestion, it didn't work that he could then speak when he came out of the trance. So a doctor suggested he put himself in a trance, which he did, and he was able to cure his own laryngitis. But the reason he had to go into a trance is really kind of interesting. Apparently, in a previous life, in Egypt, he was a very high priest, a highly developed, intuitive, and very spiritual guy. But in his previous incarnation to the one that we're talking about now, he was kind of a riverboat gambler. Yeah, where he was able to use his psychic abilities to make a lot of money and to seduce women and so forth. So the universe kind of put that on him that he had to go into a trance where he didn't really know, wasn't conscious when he was given these readings. And people would ask him questions and he'd answer them, but he didn't remember anything when he came out of that.
So once he came out of the trance, he did not remember anything he spoke about, which makes it all that much more interesting, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And at first, people would ask him questions like they'd ask him about the reason they came to have it done, you know, why they were sick or whatever. But then they'd ask him who was going to win the Kentucky Derby or you know, or who was going to win a football game or something like that. And he would tell them. And when he came out of the trance, he felt bad. He felt nauseous and, you know, soon realized why. It's because people were asking him those kinds of questions. So later on, he had his wife be the intermediary. She would be the one to ask the question. She'd be there to kind of be the gatekeeper.
In other words, they were not allowed to ask who was going to win the World Series or what the popular stock back then was going to do in the next 3 months.
Exactly.
These readings were physically taxing on him, wasn't
it? That's correct. Yes, they were. He could only give two of them a day. Apparently, it took a lot out of him when he gave one of those readings. So yeah, he gave one in the morning and one in the afternoon every day for years and years.
You mentioned previous incarnations and one was in Egypt. Was that the sun god Ra?
You know, that's a good question. The name of the god of the man he was in Egypt was Ra-Ta, Ra-T. But I don't think it was Ra because that would be the entity that came through back in the early 80s who gave the channeling that was done back then, so famous now. And yeah, that was supposed to have been Ra, who was a really an extraterrestrial from civilization that was once on Venus, if you know anything about the Law of One books.
That's probably an appropriate topic for this show and all that, which I never thought of. I had known that the origin of Ra and the Law of One was from another civilization, but I didn't really know what planet it was. Interesting, though, because a lot of us are aware of is riverboat gambler incarnation, which he actually accrued some karma for that, which I think he had to work off in his next incarnation.
Well, that's right. And that's what he was really doing during that incarnation when he gave so many of those readings, which mainly were to help others, particularly with health problems.
Once, you know, Casey passed, who do you think are his contemporaries? Who's carrying on the work of Edgar Casey?
Well, I think there's a number of people. What is the lady, Elizabeth Hay or something like that? She's given a lot of advice. There are a lot of channeled entities. We just mentioned one with Ra. Those are really more for the meaning of life and that kind of thing rather than the health issues. Apparently, Casey was able to go into and read someone's subconscious mind. And in your subconscious mind, in all of us, everything about us is in there. We can't access it ourselves necessarily. Sometimes we can through meditation and so forth. But he could go right to that and tell you what was wrong and how to cure it.
So how is that different from a reading where Casey would discover past lives for that particular entity, that particular person?
Well, what happened is that apparently a lot of times our problems in life have to do with something that's carried over from a previous life. And Casey was a strong Christian, so he personally did not believe in reincarnation because, of course, as you know, it's not part of the canon of the Christian church. But it started coming through when people would ask, you know, why do I have this problem? And he would tell them it was something that was coming from a previous life, a phobia or whatever that they had developed. You know, perhaps they were murdered in a previous life or had drowned or whatever, and so they were afraid of water, that kind of thing. You know, when that first started happening and he realized he was talking about reincarnation, he was kind of flabbergasted and apparently for a while stopped giving readings because of it, because of his Christian faith. But then he read the Bible, which he did all the time anyway, and started seeing in there that there are a lot of references to reincarnation. I mean, they don't say the word reincarnation, but they definitely refer to it. For example, Jesus said that John the Baptist was Elijah, which is a reference to, you know, Elijah lived 400 years before John the Baptist. So then he realized that it's in there, but it's not practiced or part of the church today. So he kept on going with it.
You mentioned the meaning of life, which is contained in the title of one of your books, which is Edgar Casey, The Meaning of Life and What to Do About It. What brought you to write the book?
A little over 10 years ago, I had a radio show where I interviewed a lot of people, and it was, the name of the show was The Truth About Life. And I knew about Edgar Casey and had read about him. And I live in Virginia. And of course, Edgar Casey did all these readings and lived in Virginia Beach, which is not all that far from me, in fact. And there's the Association of Research and Enlightenment, which was an organization, nonprofit that he founded, is located there in Virginia Beach, still going strong today. It's 68th and Atlantic Avenue. So I made an appointment, went down there and interviewed the chief executive of that organization and also a couple of other people, one of them being Edgar Casey's son, who was still alive at that time, Edgar Evans Casey. He died at 95 or 96, and he was probably pretty close to that when I talked to him. You know, it made a great radio show and had all those interviews, and I decided to turn it into a book because it really gives a lot of good information about why we're here and what we ought to do about it. That's how it happened. And as far as what the meaning of life is, according to Edgar Casey, we are spiritual beings having a physical experience.
Not the other way around, which a lot of other people think. It gets very confusing, I know.
Yeah, a lot of people think we're bodies that have a spirit, but actually we're spirits that have a body. And our natural habitat is not on this earth or in three-dimensional physical reality, in the spiritual realm. And according to Casey, we came here, the earth wasn't really meant for human habitation, for habitation of us, we spirits. And now that we're here, the goal is to get back to the source where he said we were sparks of the source. I would say that we're really kind of the arms and legs of the source. We're connected to it. We're all one. It just seems that we're different, you know. And the reason we're here is to learn, to evolve, to become the idea of service to others, helping others, using our talents for that is really what we're here to do. And you know about karma, of course, which Casey said was probably not the way most people think of it. Most people think of karma as cause and effect, or you're going to get punished if you do something bad. It's more a memory that we have, or more something that's part of our psyche that causes us problems. For example, some people don't understand why they keep attracting individuals who hurt them, you know, love affairs that go bad constantly one after the other. Well, Casey would say that's probably karma, where the person has a low opinion of themselves and they keep attracting others who have low opinions of them. And that what we need to do is to realize that. And once we are enlightened by what's going on, the things that we continue to encounter one after another, then that will stop happening. And we've actually grown as a result. We evolve and we return to the source. You know, that's going to take a long, long time, probably millions of years, but that's what life is about. We're here, it's a school, and we're learning one lesson after another, hopefully.
That's a great explanation. So it is your school. And I imagine many people would be almost a little bit shocked to hear that Earth was not meant for habitation by humans. In a lot of Edgar Casey's books, some of the stories about creatures and aliens and different civilizations, pretty amazing. What are some of those things that he was able to reveal while in the self-induced trance?
Yeah, well, what you're talking about there is when humans first decided, because we have free will, we were able to explore as spirits the universe and all different realities and so forth, and the Earth being what it is, the only way to really come into this reality is through a body. And of course, there weren't human bodies back then. There were other kinds, you know, and so the ideas of human-animal mixture, you know, like the minotaurs and the, what is the centaur, the horse, you know, that got a human head. And
unicorn, things like unicorn, that.
Sphinxes, you know, that the lion and those things really did exist. Maybe they didn't look like that, but there were human spirits in those kind of animals. Eventually, we settled on the ape-like creature, which evolved into what we are today. And as far as the other civilizations, there was Atlantis is a big one. There was one even before Atlantis called Mur, which is interesting because apparently the Chinese have legends about an ancient civilization called Mur. Then those civilizations evolved and Atlantis really destroyed itself, you know, kind of like...
with lasers made with crystals.
Yeah, some kind of advanced technology, sort of like us destroying ourselves if we were to do so with atom bombs or atomic bombs. So, yeah, it's very interesting. There's a little bit of that in this book, but most of what I've focused on in Edgar Casey, The Meaning of Life and What to Do About It, is about reincarnation and about karma and what we should do. Set an ideal, for example, and use our talents to fulfill that in some way, in some ways in service to others. That's really what the ideal should be. Serve others, use your talents, love what you're doing, enjoy what you're doing. You know, if you love basketball, be a basketball player, but do it not to make money, but to entertain others or to train other people to have certain qualities.
The Atlantis theory, history, whatever you want to call it, I know that Casey wrote about that quite a bit. You also mentioned that the Chinese had a history of an ancient continent. Wasn't Atlantis, was it Lemuria, or was it the other continent you mentioned earlier?
I think it was Lemuria, yeah, that they had, and the civilization was called Mu or something like that.
Right, exactly, yes.
Yeah, right. So, and of course, the Chinese, they do have the oldest civilization that we know of, which goes back 5,000 years. So apparently that one, Lemuria and the Mu civilization, was prior to Atlantis. But you know, human beings have been around on this earth for a couple hundred thousand years, so there's an awful lot that could have happened we just don't know about.
Right. How important do you think the Atlantean civilization is to us today in terms of development and a look back into the past?
Well, according to Casey, the Atlanteans, when their civilization was destroyed, many of them physically went to Egypt and set up shop there and probably helped that nation develop. And of course, that is kind of a something that we come from, the whole Egyptian thing. Another place they're supposed to, according to Casey, have gone besides Egypt is over near Spain. And they're the group of people over there, the Basque. You know, their language is so strange. It's different than anything else, according to Casey, would have been, because they spoke the Atlantean language. And that's what Basque is today, is what's evolved from that. You know, I think that probably those notions were carried over into places like Greece and Egypt and early civilizations here, and that it's influenced who we are today.
I think the most evidence we have of earlier civilizations, Atlantis, Lemuria, and civilizations that predate recorded history, a lot of that can be attributed to Edgar Cayce more so than any other psychic, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, definitely. I don't know of any other psychics who have talked about that a whole lot. Do you? I'm not sure.
I'd like to learn more about that. He talked about in his book, Edgar Cayce, on reincarnation, about several different civilizations that were not of this earth. And I have yet to read anyone else or learn of anybody else that spoke of that.
Yeah, and a lot of people think that the UFOs that we see really are other civilizations that are not trying to contact us. They're hanging around waiting for us to evolve to the point where they will contact us. Because we have free will, they don't want to interfere with that. So we've kind of got to welcome them in before they will. But that we could learn a lot from them. And maybe some of the ancient civilizations, the Sumerians, for example, might have been influenced by or contacted by or helped by aliens from UFOs. I think the name that comes to mind is the Anunnaki, who may also have been involved in ancient Egypt. You see some of that in the hieroglyphics, writings of these ancient civilizations. A lot of people think point to that.
Right. And that's the Anunnaki. That's going back hundreds of thousands of years, is it not?
Yeah. What little I know about them was that they kind of used the human race as sort of slaves to help them mine minerals they wanted or needed for their civilization. You know, some people think they're still around somewhere kind of hiding, I don't know, through some sort of a stargate or whatever. You probably know more about it than I do.
What do you suppose Edgar Cayce's views were on aliens? Did they think they were all benign or some were not so benign and some actually did want to see us evolve, as you mentioned earlier?
I'm not sure what Edgar Cayce thought about that. From others that are into that more than I am, I think their main idea is that they're really benign, that they are there, they're kind of watching, they're waiting for an opening. I had a boss when I first got out of college, my first real job, who had been an Air Force pilot. And he said that once when he was flying a big transport over the Atlantic Ocean, that a light that came up and rode alongside the cockpit, that everybody in the plane, all five or so of the crew, saw it, that it was there for about a half an hour following them along. And then it shot off to the right in a speed that would be impossible for any physical object to have achieved. And that he filed a whole report about it. And that was the last he heard.
That makes sense. There isn't any doubt. It's just one of those things that we have yet to learn a lot more about. In your book, you had mentioned that life on Earth as a human might be compared to the movie Groundhog Day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good thing to talk about. If you've ever seen the movie Groundhog Day with Bill Murray, you know that he's a kind of a cynical guy who repeats this day over and over again. And he meets these situations every time. And he starts out being very cynical and kind of dismissive of it and even mean or cruel. And it goes on over a long period of time. And finally, he meets them in a more loving and compassionate way. And when he finally does that through a whole day, he's able to move on to February 3rd. And so I say that's a great analogy or even a metaphor for life on Earth, because that's what we're doing. We're meeting these different situations that we can learn from, as the Bill Murray character did. We can deal with them with compassion and love rather than, you know, being dismissive or cruel about it. That will help us grow and evolve. And so that's what happens to the Bill Murray character. He evolves during that period of time over and over again, meeting the same situation. And that's what we do here on Earth. So it is a great metaphor for life on Earth.
And when you mention life on Earth, you're talking about incarnations over and over again, where one life, or it could be several lifetimes, people keep repeating the same mistakes until they learn from them, and then they can evolve.
Exactly. You know, I don't know if you've ever read the book, Many Lives, Many Masters.
I have.
But that is a psychiatrist who had a woman who had a certain phobias, and he asked her to go back to the first time that whatever it was that caused them happened. And she goes back into a life 3,500 years ago. And apparently she's been reincarnating for how many times for 3,500 years, repeating the same thing over and over again. But she's like the Groundhog Day thing.
It would appear so. Cayce also mentioned that we should develop an ideal. What did he mean by that? And why do we need one?
Well, you know, I think the reason we need one is that it's human nature to kind of seek the easy way out, to try to use our talents to get rich, make a lot of money. And whereas if you set an ideal, it kind of becomes your North Star. In other words, you should use your talents. You should have a profession that you enjoy and you love getting up on Monday morning to go to work. You should have all those things. And the way you can do that is to use your talents and gifts to help others. So by setting your ideal typically ought to have something to do with service to others, and it should be using your talents and things that you like and love in life to serve others. And if you can do that, rather than just take the easy job that's going to pay a lot of money or whatever, you're going to have not only have a happier life, but you're going to grow spiritually. You're going to evolve in this lifetime.
So the service to others, and I'm sure part of that comes from his Christian upbringing, but it makes sense that if we can understand the concept of oneness and we are basically all part of the same being, as it were, then it's almost like you're looking at yourself in a mirror, albeit one, a reflection that doesn't really look like you, but it would make sense you would want to help yourself.
Well, that's exactly right. The golden rule, do unto others as you would have others do unto you, is definitely a Christian idea. It's something that Jesus said. You know, he said, love God and love your neighbor. But it's in other religions as well. In every religion, as far as I know, has some form of commandment to do unto others as you would have others do unto you. As you said, that we're all one, and we just look and feel different and think we're different, probably most of us. And in effect, we are, in that we have an ego and so forth that we've developed over this lifetime, and really a higher self that we've developed over many lifetimes. But nevertheless, we are all one. Jesus said, for example, anyone who's seen me has seen the Father. But he also said, whatever you do to these, the least of my brothers and sisters, you do to me. So to me, that indicates that he realizes that he's at one with God, but he's also at one with everybody else. And I think he was right about that. He was an evolved being who knew what was going on. I mean, why he was here and what the world and the earth and everything else was all about.
What did Casey ultimately say about Jesus? Did he die for our sins? Was he an ascended master? What exactly was his role? Most of us know that he had a problem with reincarnation in past lives because it was in conflict with his Christian upbringing. But how did he resolve his Christian upbringing with this new information he had about reincarnation in past lives?
The conclusion he came to about Jesus is the same one that I have, which is that, no, he didn't die for us. I mean, he was not a sacrifice. That was an idea that existed 2,000 years ago when he lived, that, you know, you sacrificed a lamb or a pigeon or, you know, dove or something to God so that you could cleanse your sins. And so the idea that Jesus was sacrificed for our sins is a 2,000-year-old idea about sacrifice. The conclusion he came to is that Jesus was the embodiment of the Christ consciousness, which is not something that has to necessarily have been unique to Jesus, that there are other masters throughout the ages. Maybe Buddha would be one, or Confucius, who also embodied the Christ consciousness. And it's really, that's an ideal for us to work toward, to try to become that. Because once we reach that level, if we ever do, then we can move on to another reality, to a higher reality, to one where we don't have so many problems.
Christ consciousness and the equivalent for different civilizations, countries, the Muslim equivalent, the Jewish equivalent, and so on, that could be almost like a unification of sorts, where it's something that we could all agree on. But there are people that are convinced he died for our sins because that's what their pastor tells them.
A little earlier, I mentioned the law of one, the Ra material. I think there's 5 books on that. Well, Ra says that Jesus was a fourth density being a wanderer. Apparently, there are people on earth that come here from other civilizations, dimensions, that are here to help us and teach us. They often become, you know, highly regarded religious figures like Jesus, and that Jesus was a fourth density being who incarnated here. And if you know about the raw material, the fourth density is the one that's heavy duty on service to others. Third density is where we are now. Fourth density is service to others. Fifth density is wisdom. Sixth density is a combination of service to others and wisdom. And seventh density is the gateway density to return to the source.
That means you're like a Jedi at that point, right?
Oh, yeah. Ra was sixth density, so he didn't know he or they didn't know that much about the seventh density, except that that was the last one before you return to the source.
So now we are in the third density, which is very consistent with people just trying to amass material things. But the fourth density is obviously a step above that, where it seems like the material things aren't as important.
That's correct. The first density is like rocks and planets. Second density is life, like, animals and plant and animal life. But the third density is awareness of self. You know, you can step outside yourself and consider yourself and think about your existence. That's third density. Fourth density is service to others or service to self. There's two paths. Apparently, Earth, according to Ra, is moving into the fourth density. And remember, his readings, his channeling was done back in the early 80s. He said that in 2012, we would pass to 51% fourth density as opposed to third. So we're now in a transitional period. And according to, if you think about it, the idea of spirituality and all this oneness and a lot of the upheaval that's going on today with, you know, Black Lives Matter and all that stuff is part of this transition that we're going through from third to fourth density.
Very interesting. It seems that there's warring factions and ideologies.
Well, it's something we could talk about. I have written a book about that. The name of the book is Your Guide to Achieve Fourth Density. And it's about the Law of One and Ra and the end of suffering, because apparently this third density that we're in is probably the hardest one to navigate. In fact, Ra says it's 100 times more difficult than fourth density. We're in a tough kind of environment here. You know, life is not easy. As the Buddha said, life is suffering.
There's been a lot of that in the last year, and not just because of the pandemic. It's political stuff and conflict, upheaval. There's been a lot of it. And I think people like Casey are that much more important as more people start to learn about him and his contemporaries, because he was one of those people that talked about ascension and growing spiritually, which has a lot to do with moving from the third dimension to the fourth dimension or density. So is it fair to say that there are people that are fourth dimension individuals amongst us today?
Yeah, absolutely. There are probably some from even higher densities. They're what Ra calls wanderers, which means they come from somewhere else, from some other civilization, and have incarnated here. And they may not even realize it themselves, but they're really here and they decided to come, even though they don't remember, because in third density reality, we have that veil of forgetting where we don't recall past lives or what sort of a pact or agreement we made before we incarnated. But there are people here from other densities, higher densities, that are here for the purpose and have decided to come here to try to help us evolve. And Jesus was one. I'm sure Buddha was probably one, and Confucius and so on. Some of these masters.
Ascended masters.
Ascended masters, exactly.
What did Casey say about dreams?
Well, first of all, he said probably the most important thing he said, as far as I can recall, is that nothing happens without it first being foreshadowed in a dream. That whenever something big is going to happen in our lives, it's something that we will have been revealed in a dream. Unfortunately, most of us don't remember our dream. But whenever you have a sense of deja vu, it's probably because you dreamed about it already. And he said that as well. And one of the things a lot of people want to do is try to remember their dreams. And I think you can if you really go at it, you know, and to tell yourself you're going to remember them. And before you get all the way awake, have a piece of paper and pencil, whatever, beside your bed and start writing it down. Don't try to think of the whole dream. Just think about the first thing that comes to mind and start writing about it. A lot of times then you'll just keep going until you get it all out. Once you wake up, get up, go to the bathroom, whatever, dream is usually gone.
I've heard that it's good to have a notepad, like literally right on the nightstand. I remember reading about the dream part, but he also said something about patience as a dimension.
Yeah, that's one of the big things we're here to learn is patience, because in other realities, things, you think about something and it happens. I mean, it happens very quickly. Whereas here, things take time to happen. And he said that really it's time, space, and patience are the three dimensions of this reality, and that we're here to learn patience. It's interesting because I had a friend who told me once that he prayed for patience, and what he got following that were lots of opportunities to learn patience. So be careful what you ask for, because he got it, but he had to learn it, you know, and that's one of the things we're here to learn.
When we talk about patience, or should I say a lack thereof, when something happens, a lot of us blame others for problems, misfortunes, and so on. What did Casey have to say about those people?
Well, he said, first of all, there's no such thing as a victim, that whatever comes to you is what you have brought upon yourself, and that the universe gives you, feeds you, whatever you need to learn and grow. So when something comes your way that is unpleasant or what you consider a problem, the way to look at it is, here's an opportunity for me to grow. And some things that happen are pretty terrible. But in the long run, you know, many incarnations, and we're eternal beings. We're here forever, or not here forever, but we exist forever. It's not that big a deal. It's a opportunity to learn and grow, whatever comes your way. And so there's no such thing as a victim.
No such thing as a victim, which is definitely worth remembering. When something like this happens, something bad and pleasant, which happens to all of us, is it possible to know how much of that is attributed to prior soul contracts, or is some of it due to free will and just bad luck?
Well, I think it could be both. A lot of times we had some sort of an agreement with someone before we're born that we're going to come together and we're going to have this relationship and things are going to happen and we've already agreed on it. I think it's also possible that it's like the Groundhog Day thing, where we're thrown these different situations so that we can learn how to deal with them, and they keep coming at us until we get it right.
Until we get it right. I think a lot of the people listening should definitely either rent the movie or find it on Netflix. I think it's a good model to look at, to be aware. Stephen, thanks so much for joining us today. How can our listeners learn more about you and your books?
Oh, well, thank you very much. Yeah, I have a website. It's www.shmartin.com. S is in Stephen, H is in Henry, Martin, MARTIN.com. You can learn about me there. You can contact me through that website, through the contact page, and you can see most of my books, including the ones we've been talking about today. So I hope they'll do that. shmartin.com.
Excellent. I will make it a point to put that in the show notes. You've been listening to Closer to Venus. I'm Johnny Burke. If you liked today's episode, please consider subscribing. If you really liked it, you can even leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite app. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.